How much value do you put in like stuff like that?
I mean, it depends, because like there's objective journalism, and then there's also like reviewing, you know, which is cool, and I feel like there's always a place for it. I read them sometimes. I have more than anything, I'll like, if I can fuck with someone's taste consistently, then their reviews mean anything to me. You know what I'm saying? Pitchfork doesn't have like favorite record, OK Computer, you know, least favorite record, fucking Linkin Park. And then I like this record this much, you know? Or they, you know, if it was like Bare Naked Ladies is my favorite record ever, but I hate this fucking POS record, it'd be like, okay,
that makes sense.
I get you.
Yeah, you know?
But I don't know. It's a game, man. You throw yourself in it. Like, there are some shit that I like to look at and like to read, but I just hope they don't review my shit, because they never fuck with me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I got the Pitchfork this time. First day it came out, which is good. I'm happy that they felt this record a little bit. It seems like it. They gave it like a 7.4.
So you just basically taking all criticism, no matter like.
I just don't look at the shit. Like,
oh, okay.
I don't like. I look at reviews from my last record before I start the process of making a new record.
Okay.
But I don't see when people fucking hate my shit. I don't know. I look at Pitchfork because I want to see what people are thinking out there. But you know, like, it's hard to tell with those guys. It's easier with like a Fantano review guys, because you have like a barometer. You're dealing with the same reviewer, so you have a barometer of the shit they fuck with and the shit they don't.
And they have like writers and all these different people. So you can't nail down what they're gonna like.
So I just stay away from things when it's about me.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So with that said, you prefer like what kind of like what we do over like written stuff, or is just
Easy.
Yeah.
I prefer having. I mean, written stuff. There's a consistent set of writers at Pitchfork or at any of these places.
Right.
You know, but I'm not reading every review that they have, and I'm not following certain writers, which I could be if that was what I was trying to care about.
Right.
But with you guys, or with somebody, anybody that really does consistent reviews and has for a long time, you just have, you know, more clean idea of where you're actually fitting, and it feels less industry, and it feels less like, this is cool.
And you see the person.
Cool. Yeah, and you see the person,
and you can see the real response. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, you can tell if they listen to it.
Yeah.
You know? Because you get a lot of reviews. I've had a couple of reviews of this record where my manager will do pull quotes, and she'll pull out stuff where it's like, well, this is largely accurate if you want to read it. Or this one, Dave, say that you fill in gaps with the Doomtree rappers on this record.
Clearly they didn't listen to it.
They clearly never heard this record.
Not a single Doomtree rapper.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, POS is back with fucking high octane, super high energy political rant again. It's like,
once again,
okay.
You didn't listen to the record.
You didn't check the record at all. You know, like, and that's it's whatever. It's nice that. Basically, it's nice that my fans know that there's new music out if they haven't already figured that out. Because they're flipping through or they're clicking and they're like, oh yeah, new POS man. You know? So.
Do you not read it for like, you don't want it to get into like the creative process or poison your. Okay.
Exactly, that's how I've always been. I remember after Audition came out, reading some YouTube comments, reading some reviews, reading some stuff, and just being like, all right, my fans like me. These people who don't fuck with me really don't fuck with me. This is not anything I want to think about. And then just kind of from there on, you know, I don't ask for numbers. I don't ask for ticket sales. I don't read reviews. I just get there. Whatever crowd's in the room is the crowd I pay for, I play for. And, you know, the people that know the new songs are the people that know the new songs. I'm not trying to, like, if I was trying to be in the game like that, there's a lot of things I would have said yes to along the way. A lot more things I would have said yes to along the way. But we don't even live here. I had the, you know, biggest budget I ever had, spending on this amazing producer. That album sounds really good. We sat in the studio with Mos Def. We had like, you know, we were sending out, you know, I gave him 2 beats. I was like, if you got time,
really?
Please. Yeah, and he ultimately didn't have time. But we sat in the studio for like 6-8 hours talking about Watch the Throne and like, kicking it, really talking, building, which was way cooler to me than if I would have got him on the record.
Yeah.
Or like figuring out, okay, how much is it gonna cost to try to get Pusha T on this track?
Yeah.
Or, you know what I'm saying? And I really spent a lot of time trying to be like, okay, this is that record, we can do that. And then when it came down to it, my most famous friend, Justin Vernon, who's on like probably the catchiest song on the record, we didn't even make a video for that song or promote it as a single, because I just ran away from that entire vibe of going about life. It just seemed like I should just stick with my friends, stick with what seems to like be real and true, you know?
I was gonna ask, this record was actually a pretty big shocker for me.
Yeah.
It was not the direction I thought you were gonna go in. I thought you were gonna get even more aggressive.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I know you, but I was like, for some reason in my mind, I was like, this next record is gonna be a lot more angry, a lot more abrasive. What made you go the route of making it a lot more, I know it's chill dummy, but what you made the record a lot more chill, calm down, pull back.
I named the record after the songs, you know? I didn't have a name or a concept for the record when I started, you know? And I also didn't intend to make slower songs or prettier songs. Like, I just made a pile of songs. This was the best of the bunch. And ultimately, like, there's not really tons of politics. You know, it comes out in who I am when I'm talking about me and my life, but like, it's not like overtly political, you know? And it's just because those are the songs that I needed to make, I guess. You know, like, I don't, if you've been, listening for a while, so you know that I don't make, you know, this is a song about tacos, and then I rap about tacos, and the chorus is about tacos, and then another verse about tacos, and it's my tacos song, right? It's like, I always have like a loose theme for the song, and then I just kind of like mind vomit. You know, I come at it like MF Doom, where it's like, I set up a line or set up a thought, finish the thought. If I have a continuing thought, I will continue. Otherwise, I will go to the next thing.
Right, right.
You know, and so I don't write in that straight, like linear way. So it very much was a whatever was written is what it was. So trying to attack harder beats that I made, trying to attack harder beats I collected from other people. Just the songs were better when they were kind of just tackling my like demons and my shit for a little while.
Yeah,
you know, so maybe I got all that out for the next one,
right?
But I don't really know, because I don't really plan on how these things are gonna go, you know? Every time I think I know what I want a record to sound like, it sounds way different than what I intended. So I just kind of follow what's gonna happen. A lot of people were expecting me to go back to guitars.
That's what I thought,
you know?
Yeah.
And I did, but
not in the same way.
Not in the way. I think I set out to, and the first like batches of beats that I made were all heavy drone in the same vein as like sleep drone.
Yeah.
But like more, just faster and less groove, you know? Less like baseline and more like just pounding.
Yeah.
And then it just, the verses that I was coming up with for that kind of stuff, the energy that I was making just wasn't, it just wasn't lining up. And then when I sat back and just like wrote something like Gravedigger or whatever, like, just popped right out. So when I had the songs that I was gonna whittle the record down to from, it just turned out to be that. And the idea of, it was originally called Hot Dog, just because I like Hot Dog, all caps, exclamation point, because, you know, with We Don't Even Live Here and such like a giant concept that was like right before Occupy and like just kind of riding the zeitgeist to all, everybody's mad, everybody, you know, like, and Audition and Never Better and these big kind of like grandiose titles for records. After such a break, it seemed like I just gotta like cut expectation for myself. I've gotta take weight off this thing. Let's call it Hot Dog. Let's like, whatever the songs are, let's just make it like, let's just take the pressure right off with the name. And then Chill Dummy made more sense after I picked the bash, you know, and it was running between me and Laserbeak and my manager Mary, between Hot Dog and Chill Dummy. And then as the order came up, it was like, oh, this is definitely a Chill Dummy.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if people felt that he was gonna put out an album like that because of the climate, the climate that we're in America with Trump being president and just, you know, really flipping the world upside down on his head right now.
Honestly, I was finishing up the record as, you know, he was elected and as it was all like really going down, and there was time to like, maybe I can cram like 3 or 4 more songs on this thing, or maybe I'll write 3 or 4 more and they'll fit the mix or whatever. But it just felt forced. It felt like it did. I didn't even actually get to sitting and writing. To me, I still, and then in my phone and my notes, I've got a million lines, but I've got nothing that's put together as a verse, because that just wasn't where I was coming from. Where I wanted to be more than anything was, okay, I still want to make sure that my views on the world are expressed on this thing.
Yeah.
I still want to make sure that outwardly to the public, people know where I stand on things. We're still going to donate to the ACLU. We're still going to like move, keep the fucking ball rolling, trying to do like the positive things that I feel like we do, I still represent as you know, an anarchist in most aspects of my life.
Maybe you need that break. That's what I'm saying.
I needed to talk about, if I was going to make songs at all, based on what came out, is I needed to talk about what my last few years have been like personally. You know, and after I get my house in order, maybe I can get my guns blazing again. But like the point for this one was, let's get back on solid footing. Let's make sure that I am a dude, as a dude, am like as well constructed as I can be before I start like expressing my views on shit. Right now, and during the process of the record, my views don't matter because my house is in order. I had a kidney transplant and didn't think about the fact that I could die until like 2 years after the transplant. Because why bother? Why like put yourself through that?
Yeah. So
I don't know. I have feelings about the state of America and the world, and I'm sure I'll get to it. But this record is a lot more about just where I've been.
Because I was actually wondering that, because like you had a Black Lives Matter line. You were like, Black Lives Matter, some of y'all don't give a shit, some of y'all fuck with, some of y'all indifferent. Yeah. And you said some of y'all thought that racism was over because the president was black.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get like, what were you trying to convey with that?
I was just trying to say that that's a real thing that happened, you know? Mm-hmm. A lot of people were like, how could there be racism?
Right.
We have a black president.
Black. Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's like a real feeling people still express. I'm a paranoid dude in a lot of ways, and you know, 8 years ago, I was a lot more paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought for sure that if he won, there would be fires in the street, and
right.
we'd see the fucking Klan, and we'd see all these fucking people.
Like, right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they couldn't do that. They had to contain it. They can do it with the way they voted or talked on the internet, mm-hmm. or Trump talking about fucking Kenya, like whatever it is, they could find their subtle ways.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump is the fucking tire fire. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Trump, yeah, the Klan too, like, Trump coming in is everybody who had those racist feelings being like, yes, yes! You know? And I'm not saying everybody who voted for Trump is racist,
but I'm saying
all of the people who are racist
voted for Trump.
Yes. Voted for Trump and have like this like fucking dude that can go out and fucking, yeah, we're gonna march now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they didn't have that, and they didn't really have the maybe bravery,
mm-hmm.
balls, whatever it is, to do it maybe on the second inauguration. You know what I'm saying? They might have thought, well, since he's black and we get out there and protest, he's gonna change rules and lock us up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what Trump's doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are fucked. Everybody is fucked, even the people who don't believe they're fucked, because when he gets his Muslim ban or travel restriction or whatever the fuck they want to call it, you know, when that shit goes through and the people who are assuming they're going to be rich later, so they vote with their future money that's never coming,
mm-hmm.
they're going to see they're fucked too.
Maybe when it quiets down, you know, then you'll be
like
there and be
a voice
out there. If that's something you do, but...
There's amazing voices out there that absolutely will do it.
Right.
You know, when the right words for that situation come up in my brain, they'll come out in a song. You know, like, I'm not trying to go down as some political rapper, because I don't know that's what I've ever been. You know, I feel like my politics come out because I'm putting myself, you know what I'm saying? Whatever it is about me that I want to share, parts of my personality are heavily into politics, heavily thinking about the world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can't really avoid it, but I don't like go out there writing, this is a song. That's my Immortal Technique voice, but this is a song about the prison. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to mention every struggle that I identify with or that I can put into clean words, but I don't have the education to have a song about every little detail.
Right.
I want people to research the things I do know and can share.
Right, right.
And I want people to feel like they can come up to me after shows and put me on. Tell me something.
So, moving away from the record. Actually, I have one more question about the record. I'm sure it was a conscious choice, but what was the reasoning for not having any Doomtree members?
There was no conscious choice.
Oh, really?
There was no reasoning or anything. It was just, I made a bunch of songs. A bunch of the songs were solo songs that I was really fucking feeling.
Uh-huh.
They weren't gonna have anybody else on them. And then I made a bunch of songs with my friend Monty because he's really easy to write with.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I made a bunch of friends. Yeah, it wasn't conscious. It's just when the pile of songs was picked, these are the ones that fit this record the most. I had Laserbeak hit me up like, okay, so the release date is this day. And I was like, oh, so you're trying to tell me I should finish this record. not my deadline to turn it in, but the release day is already now? Okay,
wow.
Cool. I'll just, because honestly, man, if nobody's pushing me, I won't do anything.
Yeah.
I won't. And it's not about lazy, it's about, I make all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah.
I make tons of music. I've been making fucking shoes, you know what I'm saying? I like
shoes.
I just got into like the last year and a half. I've been
trying to get stretching.
No, I'm not trying to get Kanye. Kanye is super inspiring as far as like hopping into fashion or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, I more mean, I don't think I'll ever make anything that goes into production. I think I'll hand make every pair of shoes I sell. You know what I'm saying?
Dope.
Like, I will spend the fucking week making somebody a pair of shoes, and it'll be the best shoes they ever had, and they'll have them for their whole fucking life.
Wow.
Like, that's what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
I'm not trying to team up with fucking Reebok or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'm trying
to
make some shit with my hands. That's
so you're saying
like
literally make the bottom soles, bottom material, like paint and
all
that?
If you go in my kitchen right now,
wow,
you're gonna find a high post leather sewing machine.
Wow.
Yeah, and
dude,
a giant pile of leather.
Dope, cause
I ain't got room except for in my kitchen. So I'm sitting in my kitchen, watching my TV in the living room, stretching leather, leather around glass, hammers, nails.
Yeah, that's
how do you get into making
shoes? I always wanted to do it, honestly, and yeah, I always wanted to do it, but it's the thing I figured I'll be like 50 and then I'll go to Italy for 2 weeks and train under a master and then, you know? But what really happened is I was bored, laying on my couch, and
like,
I was just thinking, and then I just sat up.
Right.
I looked in the corner, I saw a pair of SB Dunk Highs that I knew that I was never going to wear. I didn't like the colorway, I got them for free.
Yeah.
Stared at them for a minute, stared at a pair of Chuck Taylors. Picked up the Dunks, grabbed my Dremel, cut the sole off, used the Dremel, got all the, you know, excess leather and glue out of the inside. Looked at the fucking Converse, cut out a pattern from eyeball sight, got a leather jacket that I never wore, didn't fit, cut the pattern out of there. Fucking made some shoes.
Great. I've never heard of someone doing
but
that.
But since then, I showed them to like a real shoemaker, my dude Zen in Minneapolis, and he was like, these look really cool, you don't know shit. And I was like, you're right, what should I do? And then he just pointed me to all these books, pointed me to all these videos, hit up more and more shoemakers, got my supplies right, got my tools right, read some books, and then now I'm just trying to master it, you know?
That
I'm still
is
gonna, I'm still
the
gonna go.
Thing I've heard.
Yeah, I've never heard someone do that.
I'm still gonna go work under masters, I'm still gonna go get this shit right. But, you know, right now I'm a rapper.
Right.
That's my hobby. But when I'm like 50 or so, I'm gonna be the best shoemaker there ever was.
Yeah,
Nah, I'm gonna try and like, I mean, I'm sure everybody's trying to do this, but I'm gonna try to make like a classic men's shoe.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna try to get rid of the leather sole, use all those techniques to come up with a really cool rubber sole. And have it not be like an old man heeled shoe, but something that people would fucking wear and really like.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, when I'm in my early 20s and somebody's like, what do you want to do with your life? It's like, I've always wanted to, you know, build guitars. I've always wanted to make shoes. I've always really loved making music. That's what's working, so that's what I'm gonna do. But like, these are the things that I dream about. I want to have a big artist compound that people come to from all over the world to make their records, you know? Mm. I have shit to do with. It's just a destination that they go to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Make records, make shoes, work on their designs, fucking paint, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, in my dream world, I got a big compound in the desert where people come from all over. You know, these are like my big dreams.
That's definitely
that's
cool.
That's it. I've always been into style more than fashion.
You
know, like, you know, if you look at pictures of me from the 90s and early 2000s, I look like shit like everybody else, but at least I was doing it in maybe a cool way, or maybe I grew into
your own
taking
style.
All the pieces that I grew up with.
Yeah.
And, you know, growing up a punk hardcore kid, growing up into hip hop, and then just kind of putting it all together to try not to look like everybody else.
So this was actually my last question. You keep like taking parts of my life, but and I've never been able to ask anybody this question besides Chesky.
Cool.
Being an old punk and hardcore kid, which that's where I came from too,
I know, right?
And then moving into hip hop, which is funny because we moved into hip hop off the same record, just Funk Crusher Plus. So I always tell people that there are so many distinct parallels between the way the punk and hardcore scene moved and the way the hip hop scene has moved. Yeah. From like being political and very message driven to being more mainstream and kind of less like message driven.
Dumb.
Yeah. Do you ever think about that? And what's your take on that?
I've always thought about that. I think before, you know, I always used to try to convince my friends that like hip hop, but didn't like punk, or like punk, but didn't like hip hop. You know, this is like before there was a Pharrell, way before there was a Tyler. Mm-hmm. It was just me in Minnesota, and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like, it's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like the roots of rebellion in the suburbs, where your parents can maybe afford a guitar for you. The roots of rebellion in the inner city, mm-hmm. where you can't. You use some shitty home turntable to find the break. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. they are totally parallel, and as soon as money comes in, everything's stupid. That's how it always works. It's hard to talk to people about it because everybody knows that you need money. But do you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a long conversation. It's a hard concept to grab onto.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to leave people with?
Yeah, listen to the newest record from Sims from Doomtree. Mm-hmm. Listen to my new record, Chill Dummy. I'm POS from Doomtree. Go to doomtree.net. The 7 artists on Doomtree have... we're at Doomtree 75. That's 75 releases to pick from. Lots of it's real cheap. Lots of it's free streaming. Just fucking check us out. If you haven't heard of us, we're way doper than you think.
Cool.